Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Our next guest has a direct connection with myself. And actually yesterday, as I was running home, I was answering multiple text messages and calls. And our author, Marshall Yulrich, wrote recently, Both Feet on the Ground, Reflections from the Outside. Taking a moment to breathe untainted air, testing ourselves in tough conditions, planting our feet, and plunging our hands into the earth, sinking into a small or large body of water, creating experiences that connect us with the earth and ourselves. Welcome, Marshall, to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you, and I enjoy a bit of running myself, and yesterday was running home, and literally was about an hour and a half of phone calls and text messages and you know, work stuff, and by the time I got home, I was impressed with my pace, but I am more disturbed with the amount of time I was still connected. It seems like the core of your book, Both Feet on the Ground, is the antithesis of what I just did.
Yeah, it's really true. When you get outside, and the more time that you can spend, the better, because I think what that does is going outside draws you inward and helps you reflect on your life, gives you, you know, time to think, to clear your mind, and just connect with nature.
And you have a bit of experience connecting with nature. Your resume is super impressive. Many marathons, 130, I think it was, and running across America. How do you disconnect?
Well, to disconnect, what I do is I try and immerse myself in the outside. So take, for instance, running across America. You know, every day I was out there for 16, 17 hours covering 60 miles per day, and I would just let my mind drift and pay attention to just the very little subtle things that nature had to offer, what the road had to offer, you know, that stretched in front of me, and it would just draw me forward. And you would almost get into a kind of time lapse of sorts where time would just fly by, and you think it would be terribly boring, but it isn't, because you can reflect on things. Even things, subtle things like, you know, how important it is to connect to people, because I had a support group out there and I couldn't do what I do without having that support group. But you fine tune and really connect with those people, and you think about your family and what you're missing out on. So you can occupy your time very easily while you're out there.
I think so much of it is, it comes from forcing us into the present moment. And that's something that, you kind of talk about this a little bit in your introduction, which is, you know, we can read all these self-help books and we can attend all these seminars and go to therapy. And the bottom line is, you know, be present now, or be here now, as Deepak Chopra or someone like that says. And yet, you know, the reason we want to be present so often is, in your case, it was to calm sort of the voices in your head and keep your sanity after your first wife passed away at a very young age, you know, I think just before 30 years old, of breast cancer. Talk about, you know, that thing that led you to run.
Yeah, I think more than anything, I was just lost when, you know, she was such a huge part of my life that I felt lost. And so I just was going through the motions of living for 10 years. But then I was able to find running, and that was what basically saved me. And my wife, Heather, you know, helped me through a very difficult period, too. And that was a period of mourning that I didn't go through. So it took me, you know, a good 10 years to get over that. But with Both Feet on the Ground, you know, just being out there climbing Everest, going across the United States, doing adventure races, things like that, it really let me focus on being comfortable in my own skin more than anything. And as I was saying, you know, going out into nature draws you inward and, you know, gives you a perspective of who you are. And, you know, some of it isn't pretty. Some of it's pretty ugly. And you're faced with having to deal with that, too. And, you know, what better venue to do that than being outside in nature with, you know, COVID-19 going on? I see more and more people outside. So it's very encouraging. Instead of going into gyms, and gyms, of course, have their place, but I think you get the whole experience if you go outside and you immerse yourself in whatever the elements are.
Mm, absolutely. You bring up Richard Louv and the nature deficit disorder. We spoke to him when he, at some point after he had written a book about nature deficit disorder. And it's so interesting. I think many of us walk around with that affliction, if that's what you want to call it, but we're not even aware of it until we start to get outside, until it speaks to us so strongly, our need to be outside, that we realize being inside creates a disorder.
Yeah, it really does. And so and the other thing that I address in my book, I think some people are so familiar, and even kids, that they're scared to get outside. So it's a little bit about overcoming fears. I've seen people out on trails and they're scared of getting lost, or, you know, scared of nature and things like that. So it's kind of coming to grips with some of those fears that we face and just, you know, become comfortable being outside. And then there is just such an extreme comfort that's involved with that. So, yeah, and Richard really does address that perfectly. Some of the kids are so disconnected. Take, for instance, and I use examples where, you know, kids think that cattails are corn dogs, that corn dogs come from cattails, and a whole lot of examples where they're not familiar also where their food source comes from. So I think the more that, you know, we can get out and familiarize ourselves and, you know, go to farmers markets, you know, talk to the people who actually, you know, raise our food and become connected with that end of it instead of just looking at a TV and a screen that we're holding with our phones, if you will. So, yeah, disconnecting allows us to connect, actually.
Marshall, are you saying those cattails that I've been eating for years are not corn dogs?
Well, they're probably not as flavorful as you would think.
Add that salt.
So, yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. They probably have a lot of roughage in them, though.
I feel great. So, you know, with a father with kids, you know, what might you advise me? Let's, you know, my kids are struggling to... Either all their classes are online on computers. Their escape is the TV or the internet. And then, you know, if I'm lucky, they're reading a book, actually. What would you tell me? Step one, step two, get me through this.
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, if you're going to go outside, you have to be safe now. These days, you know, that's the most important. So you have to be very safe, and then, you know, be in the present moment, just as Lynn had mentioned, with your kids. Be outside with them and be in their space, present with them, so they see that you have this fine appreciation for what's going on outside and pointing things out, and that will enable them to view the world in a different way and be comfortable with it. So, you know, what I like to say is, you know, get outside as often as you can and for as long as you can. And I think for your kids, the mental health will show. It's like a breath of fresh air. I think it'll give them a nice break from just, you know, sitting in front of the TV. And I think they'll clamor for more, to tell you the truth.
Certainly. And what should I expect to see? I mean, what are some of the results that you've seen in yourself and others that you've worked with when they're really outside in these connecting moments?
Well, it's interesting because within my book, I talk about Team Red, White, and Blue, and those are disabled veterans who have had something traumatic happen to them. They could have lost a limb, or they've had brain injuries or things like that. We take them outside, and just the very nature of them going out on a trail or something, all of a sudden, they begin to heal. They pay attention to the dirt and the rocks that they have to step over. They smell, you know, all of the smells that are associated with trees, with flowers, you know, the good and the bad, as far as that is concerned. And then they look around and they see the trees. They listen to the rustling of the wind through the trees. So it's they tune into that, and it's very healing for them. So that's just one example.
I love when you start talking about noticing our world around us, because we know that if we have curiosity about the world and about what's going on, it again leads us down a path of discovery. And I think curiosity is something that is, by and large, sort of, what is it? It's like, I don't know, bred out of us or something. Not bred out of us, that's the wrong word. But, you know, especially as we age, you know, we go from being curious children and everything about the world around us is interesting to barely noticing the world around us. So I think curiosity is really a gift. And when you can discover that in yourself by being in nature, what a great thing, huh?
Yeah, I believe so, and I think the word you're looking for, it's something that is below the surface. It's an innate thing that exists within us, and I think we need to rediscover and pull that out. So, you know, take for instance, I look at a mountaintop over there or just a hill or whatever, and if I haven't been over the crest of it, I want to go up there and find out what's on the other side. So I think if we stretch to find out what's on the other side, whether we're on a trail or we're swimming and we want to stretch our abilities and find out, you know, what it is that we can do, how far we can push ourselves, those are all examples of fine-tuning who we are and coming in tune with that very poignantly.
Yeah. To what degree have you studied the physiology behind all of this that you talk about? I mean, we know Pete knows this every time he goes out for his 3, 4, 5 hour runs. He knows, you know, there's that endorphin response, or at least that's what we call it, right? But we know also that those pleasure hormones are released. And, you know, if you apply those against something like anxiety or depression that also surfaces in this chemical response in our body, what can you tell us about the balance of that or you know, what you know to be that chemical response?
Well, you know, a very good example, and you had mentioned I lost my first wife. My blood pressure went way up, and so the doctor told me, you're going to have to do something. I can put you on some sort of a medication, but why don't you try exercising? And thus, I started running. So it brought my blood pressure down to a tolerable level, and over the years it's gone down to where it's perfectly normal now, but literally it saved me. So and that's just on the physical side of it, but mentally, you know, as I was saying, it's very healing. You know, take for instance, in my book I was talking about crows, for example, and if you put them in captivity, what happens is they start paying attention to glitter and things that shine and shiny objects and things like that. And I think that's what happens to us. You know, all of a sudden we pay attention to the cars that we have or the, you know, this, the things that are very stylish. But crows in the wild, basically, they pay no attention to things like that. So it's when you put them in captivity that it really becomes problematic for them. And I think it's becoming more and more problematic for us. And, you know, if there's something to be said for, you know, COVID-19, that the good that comes of it, it is getting people outside. Maybe you've noticed a lot more people. I certainly have. There's probably mm-hmm. 3 or 4 times as many people out on the trails enjoying nature. So, you know, it's got to be healing because people are seeking it out.
You know, I think for some areas, it definitely is getting people out. And I think in your community and in ours, people are getting out and they're exploring their local, regional, you know, parks and resources. But for those in urban areas, it's really interesting. They're almost exploring their own confines. They're exploring themselves. They're exploring their apartment. And it's created this, you know, new exploration in their selves. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, what I find myself doing is tinkering and getting my hands dirty. So I'm out working on my deck. I'm out working in the garden. I'm doing this or that. But, you know, for more urban dwellers, take for instance, what they can do is they can get outside and go walk around the block or something. And, you know, another connection they can make, of course, is with their neighbors. So even though you're doing it from afar, I think I myself have noticed that people are starting to communicate on a much higher level than before. So I think it's important to just, you know, if you can get outside, that's fine. But even in the confines of what we're doing, all of a sudden it's shifting where, you know, for me, it's just doing more inside, whether it's cleaning the carpet or, you know, putting a new roof on your house or whatever it is. You know, I think it's healthy to just keep active and keep focused on moving forward.
How would this fit with like Michael Wardian's quarantine backyard ultra win? would you say that's kind of a compromise of both of those ideologies, or you know, maybe someone who's mountain biking a pump track in their backyard, you know, here in Park City? So
yeah, you know, I think that's cool. I have a great appreciation for Michael Wardian. He just actually broke one of my records. I think it was last year where I did the Leadville 100 and then went out and did the Pikes Peak Marathon, and that was like 25 years ago. And he finally was the second person to actually do it, and he broke my record. So he's a great guy, and boy is he talented. He'll get on a treadmill, and you know, I can get on a treadmill. And I know they have these video things where you can experience, you know, you're in a different place or competing against somebody else. But I'm more of an advocate of, you know, putting away all the digital stuff. And, you know, I've got a watch, just an old-fashioned watch that has the big hands on it that tells me what time and not how fast I'm going. I'm just going by the seat of my pants. And I think as I get older, I'm immersing myself more in nature because I'm able to do less and less than I used to be able to do.
Yeah, so you won't be one of those Strava people rushing up behind you doing your intervals.
Yeah. You know, I know I just kind of do an averaging yearly, but I don't keep track of like every mile, you know, altitude, this or that that's going on. You know, I know that I've run over 100,000 miles, but to be give you exactly what that number is, and some people are very motivated by that, and you know, if that gets them out the door, more power to them. But I'm just not that guy.
Our guest is Marshall Ulrich. He's the author of the book, Both Feet on the Ground, Reflections from the Outside. You know, here you are, someone who has scaled all the seven summits, the highest point on each of the continents. And we've barely talked about this. I mean, you sort of offhandedly mentioned you've climbed Mount Everest, but what a huge part of your life this has been. What was the point where, you know, was it after you ran over 3,000 miles from San Francisco to New York City where you said, now I've done that, what's next? It must be the seven summits.
Well, it was that. I had that in the back of my mind for some time. You know, in fact, since I was 5 years old, I wanted to climb Mount Everest, and I finally got around to doing it. But I don't necessarily like to talk about all of the things that I've done, because the only purpose that that serves is it puts me in that space that I am right now. And a lot of that stuff seems very unimportant, and it's only relevant in that it's given me a great appreciation and a great gratitude, a feeling of gratitude for, you know, who I am and what I'm able to appreciate, you know, take, for instance, with nature and coming full circle, being comfortable in my own skin. So a lot of that stuff that I've done is pretty unimportant in my mind.
But so then what has been the most important for you? What is the one accomplishment or task or experience that really kind of you walk away from, and that's the culmination of it?
Well, you know, from the physical side of it, and this is not the most important, but the most difficult thing was running across the United States, and I was glad to be done with that, and I had a great appreciation, you know, much gratitude when I was at the top of Everest, a lot of gratitude, but it has more to do with the people that have supported me, my wife, my children. Those are what shine through and what I come back to, because they are my support system. They keep me grounded. They keep me, you know, in a straight line. And when I go off course, they bring me back and they pull me in. And so it's very important for me to pay attention to how they're feeling and how they view me also.
It's so wonderful. The book is Both Feet on the Ground, Reflections from the Outside. And I did want to ask you, I was going to ask you how old you were, but instead I decided to ask you how old you were when you completed all of the seven summits.
Let's see, I was 53 when I completed them. I was 52 when I got to the top of Mount Everest, and incidentally, I'm 68, soon to be 69 years old. So I think it's important. The reason I mentioned that is I think that fire in our belly, I think it's, you know, keep it stoked, keep focusing on things in the future, have goals, keep setting goals, and keep connecting with nature.
Excellent. Marshall Oerich, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
Nice talking to you guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.